This is Building a Covenant Community of Believers. This is study number 15, Bless and Do Not Curse Them. Well, this is taken from Romans chapter 12, verses 1 to 21, where we're looking at the 27 imperatives for building a covenant community of believers. And this is verse 14, and we're looking at the second part of verse 14, which says, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. So that's what we're looking at, bless and do not curse them. It says in this, the opening paragraph, and I guess I need to once again remind you that it's a really good idea to start your group off with something that allows people to come in and just have a talk with each other, just chat with each other. Usually, if you've got a nighttime group over a hot drink, tea, coffee, whatever, and to be able to share some food, some finger food or something like that. And if you can, if the host facility has the capacity, to be able to do that in maybe a kitchen or dining area. And then when the study starts, move into the lounge room. And I recommend that the study group leader is seated somewhere where they have visibility of the whole group. I hope I'm not stating the obvious, but to be able to see everybody on your left and on your right around the room. And then as you go around the room, starting on your left, to ask the question, what's something you're thankful for and what is something you would like prayer for? And the whole point of this is to couch it in a safe way, to couch it in a way where people can be thankful for something that may let others into a part of their story. And also the same aspect applies to the prayer point. What would you like prayer for is really about hearing where their heart's at so that the group can collectively show care for that person and pray for their need. And then I recommend that the group leader writes that down, what each member is thankful for, what each member would like prayer for. Then at the end of the night, as a way of reminder, just remind everybody what the particular prayer points were and have each member pray for one of the other group members' prayer points. And it's a way of building community. It's a way of doing exactly what we're looking at doing in this study series. Well, this one is possibly going to open a can of worms with people. This is in the groups where we've done this. This has always provoked some emotive discussion. So the opening paragraph, which you may invite someone to read in the group. So if you say, you know, Bill, could you read this first paragraph here? And it says this, following Christ requires the grace of God. And I think this is where we need to understand that the grace of God, which we often narrowly think is just about our eternal salvation, is actually about any need we have. And of course, our greatest need is to be saved. It is our redemption. That is our greatest need. So the grace of God is meeting any need that we have. This means that we wake up each morning aware that we are at this moment needing God's grace for this day because yesterday's has all gone. The prayer that sounds like, God, I can't do this, is the kind of prayer that is actually a plea for God's grace if it is preceded with, please help me. And perhaps there is no greater need for God's grace to live the Christian life than when it comes to how we respond to those who demonstrate their hate for us. The gospel does not call us just to ignore them. Neither does it call us to simply resist taking revenge. And this is where we might start around the room. So again, there's some predictability here. I might ask the first person on my left, could you please remind us what Romans 12:14b says, which it says, bless and do not curse them. And in the context there, it says, bless those who persecute you, bless and do not curse them. And the question here is, who is the object of Romans 12:14b? And hopefully people can see that the object is our enemy. the one who is mistreating us. This is the thing that makes Christianity unique, isn't it? It's that thing that separates Christianity from every other world religion, that Christianity has a completely different response to how we treat enemies. It is very difficult to speak evil of someone whom we are praying for God to bless in every way. And that's how we're told to pray for them. Question two, how does Luke 6:28 make Christianity different to all other religions? So again, we'll take the person on the left of the person who just read a scripture, get them to read out Luke 6:28. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who abuse you. So how does that make Christianity different? It's different in how we are to think and feel about our enemies and to treat our enemies. This makes Christianity unique among the world's religions. Now, I'll tell you, in other groups, whenever we've come to just this second question, where the words of Christ talk about blessing those who abuse you, it has pushed buttons. And I think this is where, as a group leader, you need to counter perhaps some of those buttons that are unnecessarily being pushed. For example, that word abuse today has some horrible connotations. It has connotations of physical abuse and even sexual abuse. And we are not saying, not in any way are we saying that anyone should be quietly subjected to that and not protest or not do anything to resist being abused in that way. The kind of abuse really that's being hurled here is persecution, in the sense of, because you are a follower of Christ, you will be ridiculed. So I hope that you can preface that question with a proper and balanced understanding of the limits of this and the right context of it. Question three, what is one of the most powerful instruments of blessing and cursing according to James chapter 3 and verse 10? And James 3:10 says this, from the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Verse 11, does a spring pour forth from the same opening, both fresh and salt water? Verse 12, can a fig tree, my brothers, bear olives, or a grapevine produce figs? Neither can a salt pond yield fresh water. So what is one of the greatest instruments of blessing and cursing? According to James, it's our tongue, our mouth, our words, the words that we use, how we speak to others, how we speak of others. Again, here's the next paragraph. It's only a three-line paragraph. So again, ask someone in the group, Jenny, could you please read the next paragraph out? We may be this just involves people in the group. We may be tempted to think that cursing is something that only wizards and witches could do, you know, kind of Harry Potter-esque. But cursing most commonly involves speaking evil of someone. Note Exodus chapter 21, verse 17, which says, whoever curses his father or mother shall be put to death. So it's speaking evil of someone. It included expressing hate for someone. Note Job chapter 2 and verse 9, which says, then his wife said to him, do you still hold fast your iniquity? Curse God and die. But he said to her, you speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Question 4. How does 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 12 reveal the Apostle Paul's spiritual maturity? That verse says, and we labor, working with our own hands. When reviled, we bless. When persecuted, we endure. When slandered, we entreat. We have become and are still like the scum of the world, the refuse of all things. So how did Paul show his spiritual maturity? That when he was reviled or ridiculed, persecuted with words, he retaliated with blessing. He spoke well of them. He prayed God's blessing on them. and that is one of the signs of Christian maturity. Question 5, who is changed by applying our key text, which is Romans chapter 12, 14b, which says, bless and do not curse them. Who is changed by applying this? And some may say, well, the person who's persecuting us, and quite possibly that's true. But who is responsible to be changed by that verse? And ultimately the answer is we are. We are, despite how we're being treated, despite whether the other person changes or doesn't change in their attitude toward us, we will be changed if we apply that verse. How we respond to those who ridicule us and express hatred toward us is often a more powerful witness to those who observe us. So here's another point. It's not just those who we are showing love toward who may be changed by our conduct. It's also those who are observing how we respond to those who are persecuting us who may be changed by our conduct. There's just another thought. Final question, question 6. If you have lived your Christian life by cursing those who have injured you, what should you do now? And this is quite a challenge, actually, for people who are so used to speaking down and speaking ill of someone else and wishing harm for them. Now, it's a matter of not only speaking well of them, but having an attitude that backs it up, an attitude that says, I want for you God's best. I want for you blessing. And it's a real challenge. A heart transaction has to happen, and it manifests in how we live. So it's a huge challenge. And I think this is probably, as I said, going to raise some issues for people, particularly now that we're living in an age when people are more open to share about childhood abuse that they endured. So be prepared for that. And that's why I say you need to preface this study by talking about the proper limits of what Christ meant by enduring suffering and abuse. It's not sexual or violent physical abuse from someone in authority. There is no reason why any person, let alone any Christian, should be forced or even to think that they have to endure that. Well, we'll be back with study 16 and in our next study, which is from verse 15, which is rejoice with those who rejoice. Trust you're being blessed with these studies. I'm Andrew Corbett. Thanks for participating in these Bible studies.